हरि ओम सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
श्री Krishna Sandarbha Adhyayana 4 Adhikarana 1 Description of Goloka, the eternal abode of Krishna. Page 6. In the Bhagavad Gita 7:24-25, the Lord says, "The impersonalists think I have no form, that I am formless, but at present I have accepted a form to serve a purpose, and now I am manifested. But such speculators are factually without sharp intelligence. Though they may be good scholars in the Vedic literatures, they are practically ignorant of my inconceivable energies and my eternal forms of personality." Right. So that's the importance of this descending process gained from the parampara. Because you may be very, very intelligent, and you may learn a lot, and you know, be very scholarly, but using the inductive method, you can never know the Lord, because he's beyond, you know, the material elements. And what we're working with is material elements. So there's no question that they can connect. So it's only then if you appreciate this point and that one's willing to surrender and all that. Because sharp intelligence means that there's an active element there. We say someone's intelligent, they sharp intelligence. That means he's aware, he understands situation, his observational skills are very good in that. Then he can actually understand who we are. Right? Then you can apply. So these don't. They're completely an illusion about who they are, and they think they're a big scholar and all this. And yes, mechanically they are. But as far as the value to the soul goes, it's useless. So that's the whole thing. Now, if someone is intelligent and he uses that in Krishna's service, then that's very nice, because then he'll switch to using that descending process as heard from the parampara. But if not, then it's just a waste of time and disturbance for everybody. You're going to distract yourself and others. Yeah. The reason is that I reserve the power of not being exposed to the non-devotees by my mystic curtain. Means Krishna, he does that. He's unlimited. So what is our limited power going to do? We may have the idea that, no, with my power of my intelligence, I'll penetrate everything. But the point is you're dealing with a very small amount. So when we talk about this guy's intelligence, that's amongst us. Right? Does that make sense? You know, there's a Bengali saying, in a village of blind men, a man with one eye is king. You know, so that's what we're dealing with. So in comparison, then it's like that. So when Krishna has unlimited power, so then he decides he's not showing himself. That's just the way it is. The less intelligent fools are therefore unaware of my eternal form, which is never to be vanquished and is unborn. End quote. In the Padma Purana, it said that those who are envious and always angry at the Lord are unfit to know the actual and eternal form of the Lord. In the Bhagavatam also, it is said that the Lord appeared like a thunderbolt to those who are wrestlers. Shishupal, at the time being killed by the Lord, could not see him as Krishna, being dazzled by the glare of the Brahmachoti. Therefore, the temporary manifestation of the Lord as a thunderbolt to the wrestlers appointed by Kamsa, or the glaring appearance of the Lord before Shishupal was relinquished by the Lord. But the Lord as a magician is eternally existent and is never vanquished in any circumstance. Such forms are temporarily shown to the Asuras only, and when such exhibitions are withdrawn, the Asuras think that the Lord is no more existent, just as the foolish audience thinks the magician to be burnt to ashes or cut to pieces. The conclusion is that the Lord has no material body, and therefore is never to be killed or changed by his transcendental body. And so he's expanding. And so and those positions are always there. You know, it's just like, let's say, you know, the example in Satkaryavada of the clay. The qualities of the clay are already there, but you may not see a pot, right? But if clay doesn't have the ability to be a pot, you can't make a pot, right? Does that make sense? Can you make a pot out of, let's say, a shaving cream or something? Right? You can't, right? And so then it's not part of the nature. So he manifests means it's already his nature. And then if he unmanifests, you know, to our vision, but it doesn't mean it's not eternally there. The nature of the pot, that there's pots, is eternally there in the clay. So,
yeah. I mean, the discussion, the fine discussion, it's whether that is primary or secondary.
Okay.
So then we have to distinguish, I mean, in the general, but also in specific.
Yes.
So this goes even further.
Yes. Because the same with that aspect of the Satkaryavada, the cause of all causes, means there are causes for things. That some a result is there, there's a cause for that. But if you take those back, it goes all the way back to the Lord.
Yeah.
Because he's the source of all that. So that, and that's the point, is the causation theory then stops there. But because we're used to everything here that we know keeps going back, therefore then the less intelligent will take it that the Lord is like that also. You know, that they will say, well, what is his cause? And they'll say that with this big smile, like they're so clever and said that. And they said, no, but that's the point is, means even when you look at it logically, they're saying, okay, you know, he has this, like the, how you say, a source and like this, and your father's father like that, until eventually gets back to God, right? So the atheist will say, yeah, but where does he come from? But how can you scientifically have going back to sources and there is no source? It's not scientific. So even on their own platform, it doesn't work, because how would you have something that has no source? You know, by that, how you say, how would you have a philosophy that keeps going that there is no source? It can't work. So the infinite regression then can't actually work. There has to be an actual conclusion. So if you get yourself into a loop of infinite regression, it means, because it's Krishna, it's the where it stops. So,
yeah. Therefore, Mayavadis and karmis, or scientists, we can say, they say basically the same, that the nature is the, you know, like Maya, what those they call that nature, is the cause of everything, both Nimitta and Upadana. But we say, no, Krishna is the cause of all causes, and he's the cause of Nimitta and Upadana.
Mm-hmm.
And then we discriminate within that.
Yes.
How he is this and Paramatma, and so it's much more scientific, and it's actually, it proves that there's an ultimate cause. Otherwise, you know, it just goes.
Yes. It just keeps going. So the because if you look at it, it's like the Maya bodies, that when you're discussing details, they have all kinds of nice things to say. But as soon as you get to the root, that's where their philosophy falls apart. So the same with all the scientists and everybody else, the karmis, the jnanis, the yogis, it'll fall apart when you get to that point. And so, Nataha refers to a theatrical actor. Sridhar Swami explained in his commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam 1.11.21 that Anatta is an actor skillful at communicating nine rasas. The actor, situated in his sarup and in his dress, sings of previous events by acting and accepts and gives up the mood of a hero or heroine, it is said. You know how it would not be considered an uncommon thing, or as a fairly standard thing, that those in the acting field might be very liberal towards all this kind of male, female, and not making any definition, or, you know, things like that. Right?
Yes.
Then, if you look at it, if you go back traditionally, all theaters in the world, men played both parts.
Yeah.
So they don't have a problem, you know, dressing up like a lady and playing the part of a lady or this and that. So it's inherent in the nature. Just they're applying it. Means inherent in that they work with that field. It doesn't mean that they themselves personally have that nature. But the point is they can handle that. So when it starts to get degraded, they can't make the distinction anymore.
Yeah.
Hmm. So I said, why always the actors? You know, why is it they're the ones that start all this stuff?
Yeah, even in Greece, it all came from there, from the Greek theater and mm-hmm. the whole thing, you know, the liberal. And amongst actors, it was like, yeah, it was accepted. Like, if it happens, then it's kind of normal.
But, yeah.
You know, other parts of the society, it's kind of
a little
strange.
Yes. And that's in Greece.
Yeah, which was at that time was most progressive.
Yeah, yeah. It means if you were in Rome and things got a little weird, you know, like that, you just went to Greece and you were cool. It is said, Pradarshya tapasam sama vitripta drisham narinam. Ada yantaradad yastusva bimbam loka lochanam. The Lord, having shown his form, the center of all of attraction for all eyes, then took that form and disappeared from persons who had not performed austerities, but had attained the Lord's mercy, and were continually craving a vision of his form. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.2.11. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. The Lord himself comes to display his transcendental pastimes, typically represented at... Just another interesting thing is that we're reading through Sandarbhas here, right? And in this, then Jiva Goswami is giving all these technical points and then quoting from the Bhagavatam verses and other verses. Prabhupada's purports match. It's not like he's talking about one thing and this is there. It's just like you would, it just so perfectly matches. And it doesn't matter what he's talking about. Prabhupada has something that there's a purport where he's talking about that. And generally, definitely it's the purport of the Bhagavatam verse Jiva Goswami's quoting. Prabhupada's purport is talking about the same thing. The Lord himself comes to display his transcendental pastimes, typically represented at Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwaraka. He appears just to attract the conditioned souls back to Godhead, back home to the eternal world. But for want of sufficient piety, the onlookers are not attracted by such pastimes of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that only those who have completely surpassed the way of sinful reaction can engage themselves in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The entire Vedic way of ritualistic performances is to put every conditioned soul on the path of piety. Right? So the Vedic, that there's always a ritual, there's always the idea is to put you on the path of piety, so you're going towards the Lord. That's the whole point. So you see all religious systems of the world, they have some kind of ritualistic form. No matter how undeveloped it is, it still has some kind of ritual. right? Like you see, is how you say, like a modern, you know, how you say, a white wedding. It's basically just a Gandharva marriage. The only real, you know, ritualistic, they exchange rings, which is a Gandharva marriage. You change garlands, exchange rings, you know, like that. And then there's some commitment that, yeah, they want to connect to each other. And they're trying to make it into something. So that's become ritualized very much. You know, I mean, otherwise for that, they just have to agree and that's all. You know what I'm saying? So therefore the outfit, how the outfit is, you know, the people sit, you know, the girl comes and then there's, you know, the particular music and like that. Everybody stands like that. Then, you know, the father, you know, is bringing the girl. And then, you know, then there's something where he hands off. And this ritualizes the priest and then what he says and all these things. And then when they go and then the rice and the flowers and the tin cans behind the car and, you know, all those kind of things. You know, they're all, you know, it's all ritualized. So if that's not there, someone will feel it wasn't complete. You know, but technically in Gandharva, it means it's like a mix. You know, there is the thing the father's coming and giving, but it's not, it's not the main part, you know, main aspect.
So yeah, it's in jest only. Mm-hmm. It's not like anybody asked him. He has to agree.
Yeah. It's not like he can't. Yeah, but there it is. So you see, it's kind of got some remnants left from something, but it's ritualized. So everything gets ritualized, you know. And so, but the idea is by that your focus, it'll make you pious. It'll bring you closer to the Lord. Right. So that's why then any religious system, it has an advantage as a secondary support for the primary of trying to develop love for God, surrender to God. Right? Nowadays, it's looked at the secondary is the religion, but they're looking at it. That's the actual ultimate point. When it's no, that surrender to the Lord. That's the ultimate point. So any religious system will have an element of regulating, you know, controlling, trying to purify, trying to uplift, trying to bring you closer to the Lord. So in that way, it's as a support, it's useful. Does that make sense? So someone in any position could elevate themselves as long as they understand the position about trying to develop their relationship with the Lord. By strict adherence to the prescribed principles for all orders of social life, one can attain the qualities of truthfulness, control of the mind, control of the senses, forbearance, etc., and can be elevated to the plane of rendering pure devotional service to the Lord. So, by the religious performance, then that gives you good qualities, right? You're used to working, doing proper work, and developing the qualities to do that proper work. Because the point is that Mother Jashoda cooking, it's the cooking part is actually the secondary to her pleasing Krishna, which is the primary, right? On the transcendental platform, you don't have to make a distinction. It goes together. But here, then, one's performing those activities for the other aspect. Right? Does that make sense? So development of the qualities is going to be used as the secondary in any way, the devotional process, whether it's in practice or it's in perfection. Right? So the good qualities are important only in support of devotional service, not on their own, or not that they give devotional service. It's just that they're the natural form to use.
Yeah, this is one of the most difficult misconceptions to deal with it that we found with students, is that because, like you explained, in a natural form, devotional service includes piety. Mm-hmm. But for us, we practice devotional service, and because we're not from a traditional background, we lack piety. And then new people, it's big dissonance. Dissonance, is that how?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
because they expect that it's all included, which it is in a natural form. But I'm trying to explain to the students that it's two parallel paths, actually. Mm-hmm. You can be good devotee, mm-hmm. good sadhaka, and lack piety. Mm-hmm. Or you can be very pious, you know, religion person, mm-hmm. and not to have any devotional mm-hmm. inclinations.
Yes.
So most people, when they come, they expect that one includes the other. But when it isn't, then it brings a lot of trouble mm-hmm. for them to develop, for new people.
Yeah. Means new people, if they're exposed, there's not a problem, they'll develop. If explained properly so they can be applied, they won't have any problem.
Because even I was asked a question whether piety can give us some Bandha Gyan. And I said, no, Guru gives you some Bandha Gyan, but you have to be pious enough to approach bona fide Guru. Mm-hmm. That's okay, but it won't just come from piety itself, from mode of goodness or anything like that.
It means of the pious people, those who are interested to know who they are and who is God, then Krishna puts them in contact. Because it's not that the piety generates it, it's just that the piety, you're willing to accommodate that, while the impious is so self-centered that you wouldn't want to, you know, it's like Hiranyakashipu, he thinks he's God, we don't need God, we don't need any of these things. You know, so, you know, he's very sincere in those thoughts, right? Until he's flying in the air, you know, by this monster, half man, half lion with so many arms. And then as he's coming down, he's looking and going, you know, I control the universe. This guy just tossed me up into the air. You know, then there gets a little dawning, you know, of understanding. Yes, so therefore that's what religion is for. So if you don't, Bhaktivinoda Thakura makes a point that for the conditioned soul, they have to use religion. They can't function as an avadhut. Avadhuts can, because they're functioning on the transcendental platform with the spiritual activities. But here they have to. So if you don't follow religion, you'll make up your own. You know. So that's the fun part is if you don't follow the religion as it is given here, you know, by strict adherence to the prescribed principles for all orders of source of life, one can attain the qualities of truthfulness, control the mind, control the sentence, forbearance, etc. So if you don't use the traditional, what is given by Krishna, you will make up your own process. And you'll claim that, you know, truthfulness, you know, they want to know facts, then you're truthful. You know, control of the mind means you don't think of anything other than doing what they say. Control of the senses, your senses are engaged in what they say. Forbearance, you don't mind them dealing with you improperly, though they're talking about how everybody should be dealt with properly, etc. It's the next one. So, like that, they'll make up their own. It's just the way it is. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just, because the conditioned soul has to have a form, otherwise how do they identify themselves? How do they say what you're going to do and what you... You know, anything you have, that's how clubs develop. Because those guys could just hang out somewhere and talk and, you know, go out for, a drink or something like that. No, but they have to have a club so then they can, you know, it's more about that. But then they'll ritualize how that all works. What they do at what time and where and this and that. And so, then they feel that there's something proper there. Yeah. Only by such a transcendental vision are one's material hankerings fully satisfied, right? Because material hankerings are there, you have to be able to connect them to the Lord. So by connecting them to the Lord, then they can be satisfied. But if you think that no fulfilling them separately will make you satisfied, then it's never happened. No one's. When the Lord was present, persons who were able to satisfy their material hankerings by seeing Him in true perspective were thus able to go back with Him to His kingdom. But those persons who are unable to see the Lord as he is remain attached to material hankerings and were not able to go back home, back to Godhead. When the Lord passed beyond the vision of all, he did so in his original eternal form, as stated in this verse. The Lord left in his own body. He did not leave his body, as is generally misunderstood by the conditioned souls. This statement defeats the false propaganda of the faithless non-devotees that the Lord passed away like an ordinary conditioned soul. The Lord appeared in order to release the world from the undue burden of the non-believing asuras. And after doing this, he disappeared from the world's eyes. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.2.11 purport. The Lord appeared in order to release the world from the undue burden of the non-believing asuras. Undue means it's not meant to be. You know, the world is meant for bringing yourself closer to the Lord, right? Showing his attractive form, Swabimbam, he withdraws it and disappears. He does not give it up. For Sutta then says, Yada Mukundo Bhagavan Imam Mahim Jahau Svatanva Shravaniya Satkata Tadahar Eva Pratibuddha Chaitasam Abhadra Hetu Kalir Anvavar Tata. When Lord Mukunda, whose topics are worthy of hearing, left this earth by means of his spiritual body, from that day onwards, Kali, the cause of inauspiciousness, entered those whose intelligence was sleeping. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:15.36. So if you awake means you're awake to understanding your relationship with the Lord. So those who aren't awake to that, then Kali, he has his job. He left the earth by means of, or using his body, svatanva. It does not mean he rejected the world along with the body, svatanva saha. Since the instrumental meaning, by, is stronger than the meaning of accompanying, with, and having to supply extra words, saha, to complete the meaning is a secondary meaning. Right? So if you have to put words in, then it's not what it's meant. Does that make sense? It means you're saying a statement. And how it is, it means one thing, but you think it should mean something else, so then you add another word, so then by adding that, now it can mean something else. Mm-hmm. But the point is why do you need to add a word? It already means what it says. So he's saying there, they put in saha, and when it says so, it's unnecessary. Or, naham prakashas, Sarvasya yoga maya sama vritaha. I am not revealed to everyone since I am covered by my maya. 7:25. Yogi bhir drishyate bhaktya na bhaktya drishyate kvachit. Drashtum na shakyo ro shachcha matsarach cha janardanaha. The Lord is seen by yogis. By bhakti, and not without bhakti. It is not possible to see him by anger or envy. Padma Purana. Right, so they won't see him properly as Bhagavan. They may see him as a powerful person and things like that. But they can't know him as a person, as he is, by anger or envy. But if you are always absorbed in the Lord in anger and envy, you will get liberation. Because you're absorbed in the Lord, so therefore the existential position of the Lord is what's going to have an effect, so you will be liberated. But the problem is you don't know who he is, or about his sarup, so that's why then you won't get that aspect. So. Thus, to the rest, that's why then Narad Muni, after saying that, and it's glorious, then what to speak of those who worship, are absorbed in the Lord in affection. Yeah. Thus, to the wrestlers in the arena, Krishna was a thunderbolt. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:43.17. Vishnu Purana explains the form that the demons see. Atma vinashaya bhagavat drashta chakramshu Malod Jvalam Akshaya Tejas Swarupam. Parama Brahma Bhutam Apagata Dveshadi Dosho Bhagavantam Adrakshita. Seeing the Lord with the chakra in his hand, which was a mass of rays aimed at destroying him, his faults of hatred dissipated. Shishupal then saw the Lord, the Supreme Brahman, a form of indestructible power. Vishnu Purana 4:15:15. The form which Shishupal saw was not his sarup, but a form created by Maya. By seeing his sarup, his faults of hatred would have been previously destroyed. Thus, by the body, not his sarup, shown to the demons, he relieved the earth of the demons, and then withdrew that body. He no longer took any interest in it. The body seen by bhakti is the Nitya Siddha body.
And the body is the body.
But they're not seeing that form. It's just like, let's give her an example. That, what do you call it? That one, it's a Vedic example of perspective. So you have an attractive young girl, right? So the young boy will see the girl as something very desirable. The sage will see the same girl as a bag of mucus bile and air, right? And the dog will see it as something good to eat. Yes, yes. Yeah, they stand out amongst the examples, right? So, you know, so they're all seeing something different. That's created by Maya. So Krishna is who he is, but because of their illusion, they don't see him as he is. They see what they think he is.
Mm-hmm. So it's a projection. It's not who he is, actually.
Yeah, but that projection is arranged by Maya. It's because they have a mentality. It's not that they're producing the form. So that covering by his internal potency, so the demons don't see him as he is. So that form, then that's what he, after that he's performed his pastimes of removing the burden of the earth, he no longer needs to manifest that to these people. So giving that up, then he leaves and is in his own sarup. Yes.
Also, later it is said, the abode of Lord in on the earth manifests only sweetness. It doesn't manifest the Aishwarya. That's why it's very difficult for us to fathom how Goloka has more Aishwarya than even Vaikuntha.
Mm-hmm.
Because that part is covered by Maya.
Yeah, because otherwise then people will take. Yeah, it would be just means 70s, 80s, you know, it means. Yeah, I think maybe. Yeah, probably up into the mid 90s. Then in Vrindavan, you know, there would be, you know, it's just the little ashrams and the streets and the dusty, even the Parikram Mart was just, you know, Braja Duli, you know, like that. And basically just see sadhus around, and I think during Shravan and during Kartik, you'd see people come in and disappear. But the rest of the time, you wouldn't see anybody. There wasn't anything. And there would be no facilities as such for such people. Right? So there's no manifestation of opulence. But then when some started building stuff, you know, showing some opulence, then you start getting the Delhi Wallahs drive up and then stay and buying places and doing all the things like that. So now you don't see. So that's the point, is the Dham itself won't necessarily manifest that, because then people get too bewildered. You know, they don't see the Dham itself. Does that make sense? Because they're not necessarily coming there and being engaged in devotional service nicely. Right? It's like that story of the Akbar singer Wala from Vrindavan. Tan Sen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then Who is this? Guru.
Haridas.
Haridas. Yes, I think it was Haridas. Yeah, so then there was something where some discussion at some point about Tansen is so good, you know, that, you know, at first you just go with it, right? But at some point then you might reflect on, he's so good, where did he learn from? You know? And then they ask, and his teacher, so like this, and then in the discussion you can understand that Haridas is so much better. You know, he just knows a portion of what his teacher knows. So then Akbar wants to visit, so then he goes with him to Vrindavan. There may be different stories here, but, you know, basically the same, the principle is there, because I think at one point then he comes and he's with him, but I don't think he is known that it's Akbar. And he comes in with him, and I think Akbar is dressed as normally, and sits down and, you know, offers respect to the guru. Okay, so how are you, you know, like this and that, singing and this and that. So he asked him, and he had a question or something to the guru or something. So he said, okay, sing this, you know, and then he'll show him, you know, what you should do. And then, so he started to sing it wrong. So the guru immediately, you know, said, no, it's like this. And then when he sang, then Akbar got to see. So whether it was at that time later or it was a different occasion, but on this other occasion, I think he's dressed like Akbar. Or maybe he came afterwards and dressed like that. And he was down at the Ghat, I think. And he came and he said he appreciates what he's doing so much and all that. He'd like to do some service and all that. And so, you know, he may have given him the necklace or something. He gave him a necklace, you know, and what Akbar would be wearing would be the absolute best, right? And then Haridas looked at it and then threw it in the Jamuna. You know, he had the steps there. And that. And he says, you know, says, well, why did you do that? That necklace is like priceless. You can't, you know. And then he's makes the point and says, what does it matter like that? You want to render service, you know, like that. You know, you can fix, you know, on the step there, there's a little chip, you know, how, you know, the steps that has that little bit that sticks over, you know, on the steps, and there's one of them's chipped. He says, you can fix that. He says, you know, says, you're asking me? He says, you know, like that, Akbar is like that. You can have anything, and you want me to fix this little step? He says, you know, you talk so much, but go look at it and see if you can do the work. So when he goes down to this step and, you know, looks at it seriously, then the whole place turns into Chintamani, and then the opulence is there. He looks at it and just, you know, then he understands, I can't do anything. He means all my wealth together wouldn't fix that little, you know, chip in the step. And then something, but I think it was that was first. Then he said, you know, he wanted to give, you know, something, so he threw it in the river. He said, why do you do that? Like that. And he says, okay. So he turns to one of his assistants and says, okay, fish it out. You know, so the guy takes a stick and goes in there and like this, and then brings up a whole bunch of necklaces. They're way more priceless than the one he had. His was the least, you know. They were so much better. He says, pick, find the one that he gave, like that. So they gave it back to him. So he was, so that's why the opulence is not shown. Otherwise, then they'd come and plunder it. No? Does that make sense? You know, if they show a little, was it Somnath? Yeah, he's, they came, I think, 17 times or 19. Something like that, times. Took everything in the temple. And then, after a few years, they came back, did exactly the same thing. And that was how then their empire ran. You know, it had so much. Yeah. Gujarat. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. So it means the Lord doesn't reveal himself to the demons. He's in his sarup, but they don't see that. So that form, he manifests to them through his energy, through his, you know, then that is what's given up. So they say they give up that body. It means that body in which he deals with the demons, kills the demons. Does that make sense? It means we know as Vasudeva he's doing that, but they can't see Vasudeva. Like we see, Shishupal just saw Brahman. You know, he saw just somebody ordinary when he kind of got a little bit better, then he saw Brahman. Or Dhritarashtra. Then he couldn't properly see. It means when at one point there, I think Krishna showed the universal form and Dhritarashtra asked that he be able to see it. So he gave him the eye so he could see. And after that, then he went back to being blind. But it's only universal form. And then at the end, when we see when he, after he went to the forest with Vidura, and that, then he merged in Brahman. Because he didn't have that sukriti, that devotion. He had knowledge, he had respect for, but no devotion. So by the Lord's internal potency. So what you see is that you have the aspect of the pure devotees, they see according to the particular attraction they have. But here the demons, since they don't have an attraction, they only have attraction to the material energy, and all is his energy, therefore they only see that aspect. So though I am unborn, the Lord of all entities, and have imperishable body and qualities, I appear in my own body by my own mercy to deliver the jivas. Bhagavad Gita 4:6. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. The Lord has spoken about the peculiarity of his birth. Although he may appear like an ordinary person, he remembers everything of his many, many past births, past quote-unquote births. Whereas a common man cannot remember what he has done even a few hours before. If someone is asked what he did exactly at the same time one day earlier, it would be very difficult for a common man to answer immediately. He would surely have to dredge his memory to recall what he was doing exactly at the same time one day before. And yet, men often dare claim to be God or Krishna. One should not be misled by such meaningless claims. Then again, the Lord explains his prakriti, or his form. Prakriti means nature, as well as sarup, or one's own form. The Lord says that he appears in his own body. He does not change his body, as the common living entities changes from one body to another. Right? That's why they're saying about the thing of change, because otherwise they're saying Brahman temporarily takes on this form for a particular occasion, and then after that leaves that body, and then the mate in the, take another one. So, yeah. The conditioned soul may have one kind of body in the present birth, but he has a different body in the next birth. In the material world, the living entity has no fixed body, but transmigrates from one body to another. The Lord, however, does not do so. Whenever he appears, he does so in the same original body by his internal potency. That's interesting. You never think of it like that. We don't have a fixed body. We don't have a particular body. Right? Has no fixed body. We think of it, this is my body, and I've had other bodies, and will have others, but this is the body. Right? But we have no fixed body. Yeah. Hence the term. He's a nobody.
Exactly. That's the definition. Who are you? Nobody.
Yeah. Because he's not. I'm not this body, so I'm a nobody.
But then we can claim we are somebody, but we're not sure, you know, what it is exactly.
Which body? Yes. Yeah. That's it. So the Lord always comes in his original form. And then he may expand, whichever aspect he wants for the particular qualities and actions that he'll be performing, whatever his purpose is. You know, in other words, he's fulfilling his desire by his own sweet will, while we are being, by the modes of nature, being forced into various situations. So when he comes in his own body, and how he wants to manifest that for the particular occasion, that then he does himself. And he leaves with that self-same, his body. That form that we're seeing at the time may not be seen after that by us, but is still there with the Lord. And so then occasionally he comes directly in his original, you know, his full sarup. Others are expansions and various aspects of that sarup. You know, so like we were saying, the Vrindavan pastimes, it has all the elements of all other realms and of all incarnations. Just they may have a very small particular part that they play. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. In other words, Krishna appears in this material world in his original eternal form with two hands holding a flute. He appears exactly in his eternal body, uncontaminated by this material world. Although he appears in the same transcendental body as is and is Lord of the universe, it still appears that he takes his birth like an ordinary living entity. And although his body does not deteriorate like a material body, it still appears that Lord Krishna grows from childhood to boyhood and from boyhood to youth. But astonishingly enough, he never ages beyond youth, right? So that's the perfection everyone's trying for, right? You know, that's the modern, is that you get up to there and just stay like that, you know. At the time of the Battle of Kurukshetra, he had many grandchildren at home. Or in other words, he had sufficiently aged by material calculations. Still, he looked just like a young man 20 or 25 years old. We never see a picture of Krishna in old age because he never grows old like us, although he is the oldest person in the whole creation, past, present, and future. Neither his body nor his intelligence ever deteriorates or changes. Therefore, it is clear that in spite of his being in the material world, he is the same unborn eternal form of bliss and knowledge, changeless in his transcendental body and intelligence. Factually, his appearance and disappearance are like the sun's rising, moving before us and then disappearing from our eyesight. When the sun is out of sight, we think that the sun is set, and when the sun is before our eyes, we think the sun is on the horizon. Actually, the sun is always in its fixed position, but owing to our defective, insufficient senses, we calculate the appearance and disappearance of the sun in the sky. And because Lord Krishna's appearance and disappearance are completely different from that of any ordinary common living entity, it is evident that he is eternal. It is evident that he is eternal, blissful knowledge by his internal potency. He is never contaminated by material nature. The Vedas also confirm that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is unborn, yet he still appears to take his birth in multi-manifestations. The Vedic supplementary literatures also confirm that even though the Lord appears to be taking his birth, he is still without change of body. In the Bhagavatam, he appears before his mother as Narayana, with four hands and the decorations of the six kinds of full opulences. His appearance in his original eternal form is his causeless mercy, bestowed upon the living entities so they can concentrate on the Supreme Lord as he is, and not on mental concoctions or imaginations, which the impersonalist wrongly thinks the Lord's forms to be. Right, so there's that mental concoctions or imaginations that they have, that they project on the Lord according to what they think he is. The word Maya or Atma Maya refers to the Lord's causeless mercy. According to the Vishwakosha dictionary, okay, here's another one. The Lord is conscious of all his previous appearances and disappearances, but a common living entity forgets everything about his past body as soon as he gets another body. He is the Lord of all living entities because he performs wonderful and superhuman activities while he is on this earth. Therefore, the Lord is always the same absolute truth, and is without differentiation between his form and self, or between his quality and body. Bhagavad Gita 9.6 purport. So for Krishna, then, his form, his swarup, then includes the form, includes the qualities, includes the activities, includes the experience, everything that goes on that is already included. Like for us, we're sitting here trying to develop a quality because our swarup may not, I mean our form may not have it, the body may not have. You know, because the mind, we have the same mind, but the mind will be transforming according to our particular consciousness. And so, you know, for some mentality develops, and for some lifetimes it may move in that direction and slowly, slowly move on to something else, you know, depends on the, all the species of life. Right? So, but for Krishna, the qualities are inherent. So for us here, they're not. In the spiritual world, they are, but here they're not. So the soul then... The one, you know, common is that of service, the servant of the Lord. So that's there. And then other qualities are mentioned, like the qualities of Bhava that are there. Those are there in any devotee. So it will be specific, will be the particular rati. What is the flavor of that, the uniqueness of that? That will be something special. So, yes.
All right, so can we say that in the conditioned state of life, we borrow Krishna's quality, but not directly, but through the material nature.
Yes, that's from the universal form. That's where all the it'd be just like, you know, let's say you go into a costume shop, you know, or you go into the place where they're going to be doing all the you know, the wardrobe or something for a drama or something. So they have all the different things that are there. So depending upon what part you're going to play, that means it has a particular mentality, a particular action and that. Then they pull out those particular clothes and shoes and wig and makeup and all that, and then the actor goes out and performs in that way. He's conscious of that, but the material energy is that you those things are there. So all these are put together, and then you end up with what the. That's why you'll sometimes see is one, everybody is so different because of the consciousness. But at the same time, you'll see people who have something very similar. They look very similar. They do very similar things. Or so,
yeah.
You know, because it's just it's they have common. You know, the mentality is such they have common karma, so therefore it's not that it's not a regular thing. Have you ever seen that? Seems like they take with the computers, with the artificial intelligence, I guess they have algorithms that they can work out what it would come out in. They take, let's say, a sculpture or a painting, you know, that's done before of somebody, and so we'll look at it, and it has that look to it.
Yeah.
But then they'll put it into the computer, and then the AI will work on it and bring it into what it would be if it was, you know, skin and everything else like that, rather than sculpture. Mm. And then when you show that, you see the let's say the bust or something, let's say of Caesar. And then the AI goes and it brings it over to where they're there, they're looking at you, you know, the eyes are blinking and things like that. And then you look at them, that you've seen guys like that on the street. You know, suddenly they don't look quite so... Yeah, it's just... Because it's just common things, it's regular things, you know. So... You know, so it's just there. So these things will always be there. They're always saying it goes on, it changes, it's different. But it's material energy is changing that. So if something is there, it comes up.
Yeah, I guess that's how the Bhrigu astrology works.
Yeah, exactly.
He has sets of things.
Mm-hmm.
He looks on the palms, he looks in your face.
Mm-hmm.
He asks you questions, you know, some numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And then he pulls a card and just read it out. And
yeah.
It actually matches. It's really amazing.
Yeah. Because that's what it is. It's nothing's unique. It's you have Krishna's created all these different things that one will go through because these mentalities and results of that, and then they'll be put into place. And then you can see from the planets exactly where these things will come. So it's just a regular, you know, because we're thinking we're so unique and individual, no one knows, and you know, and nothing, what happens to me doesn't happen to anybody, but it's right there. Yes.
It's a famous text, famous verse quoted in Ayurveda and also in astrology that atom, yatano tata anda. Anda means the egg.
Mm-hmm.
So, however the structure of the atom is, the structure of human, that egg is.
Mm.
And whatever is the structure that is how the Brahmanda is, the universe is.
Mm. Okay.
So that's why the Ayurvedic doctor can catch your pulse and tell your full nature, everything and all. The same astrologer can also tell.
Mm.
And so they are all referring, the whole mechanism is the same, whatever it is. Our body, or the cell, with which everything is running, or
the universe.
The universal thing.
Yeah. Yes.
But we have, if you teach enough time, enough duration of time,
right,
then you can see the types of students.
Yes, yes.
The types of questions, and almost immediately you can recognize and deal appropriately.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or even in Bhagavatam, isn't there? Is it Bhagavatam or one of the places it mentions that different kinds of students? Hears.
Yeah.
Like that. You know? I only remember the one at the fish, because that's the one that always stands out to me when you see. You know that one? Because the fish, the big eyes are like blinking. You know, and they just, you're telling something and they're just looking like this. So I always remember that one, but it tells the other students also. Huh? I'm not sure, but I've come across it quite a few times. But I don't remember. I mean, we just dealt with it some years ago. No? That's the problem. Yeah, I remember, but it's nothing.
It's like yesterday's this works. About the flute.
We dealt with it
a
few years back in the beginning of the lockdown, but mm-hmm. since then we forgot completely. I mean, we had an impression about it, whether it's silver, whether it's this, whether it's just bamboo.
Yeah.
But then, thanks to the Google Guru, we will find it immediately.
Yeah,
database.
Okay. I searched through Google.
Yeah.
Then you went to the database.
it brought you to the database. But also, what Prabhu is described is actually what they refer to as a macro and microcosm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's exactly the same principle.
Yeah.
So it is there, but it's just, this idea is just undeveloped. It's within the, not even within the, like, scientists, they can't explore the whole universe, but just a small part of the universe.
Yes, yes.
But the principle remains the same.
Yeah, exactly. That's why, technically, we don't have any problem with, for us, religion and science are the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's just that people practicing religion don't necessarily keep it as a science, and those practicing the science don't keep it as a science, they make it a religion, Does that make sense? So they have their dogmas, they have their this, that, because like we mentioned before about the infinite regression, it means in science, where is that? It's not scientific that there would be. They like it because it goes off into infinity, so therefore it has that kind of effect like Brahman.
Yeah.
That feeling of it, but that's a subjective element. That they prefer that. But the thing is no, because then it leaves it open, it could be anything and you can go on eternally searching and it's the search. What is it? It's, what is it? There's some saying about it. I don't know how the word is. I only know the end of it. It says, it's not about catching something, it's about the chase. You know.
Also, but once you found what you're looking for, there's no more funding. So.
I never thought of that, the economic side. Somehow or other, I always tend to leave the economic side out of me. But it's, yeah.
And those programs, billions of dollars goes into
it. And it's prestigious that you have, even if you don't get the money. It comes to your university, and you still only get your 100 rupees. But,
yeah, you're just part of it.
You know, and you get a big chair so you don't go away. And then, yeah.
Yes. Even if they have money, what they will do? Like all those scientists, all they know is their university. They will never get out of it. So.
Yeah, they can't. They can't function outside.
My bachelor, yesterday I was looking, who went to MIT, he's still not out of college. He didn't even become a professor. He didn't settle in with the service and all.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's no life. Nothing.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I say the bugs under his microscope have more of a life than he does.
That's why he's looking at them. They don't look at him. They don't care about him.
One of them goes, the eyeball's back. Don't look. You don't want to encourage it. I'll take some more hummus. Okay. Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men felt the greatest happiness when they saw that abode. They were especially amazed to see Krishna there, surrounded by the personified scriptures, who were offering him prayers. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.28.17. Udriti. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur. Seeing Mahavaikuntha, the cowherd men were filled with the highest bliss. This is because the experience of Vrindavan and Goloka of Vaikuntha was similar to the Vrindavan on earth, because they're in Vrindavan. So within Vrindavan, there is Mahavaikuntha, there is all the different places. You know, there'll be Ayodhya, there'll be this. So then, therefore, it'll be similar. So then they find it very ecstatic. It is just like a millionaire who, having lost all his wealth, becomes full of bliss on finding some clue to the wealth. But when they began searching for Krishna with a lotus face covered with drops of perspiration, worshipable by millions of their life heirs. But then they began, searching. Seeing him, they were astonished to see him being praised by the meters of verse personified. Quote, where have these effulgent beings praising Krishna come from? They are unknown to us, but we cannot ask them who they are. Though seeing us, he does not show his boyish manners and come towards us. He does not embrace us with his two arms. We are restrained from approaching him and taking him on our laps. Today he has forgotten hunger and thirst. How can his mother live without feeding him? End quote. In this way they were astonished. Because even as him there, but how do you deal? So they're seeing Mahanarayan. You know, Krishna in that form, but they're just seeing, you know, Krishna is in this formal situation in this way, like that, but you know, he doesn't interact as he normally does, he doesn't come, what is his mother going to do? So it's not that they don't see difference, so that thing of seeing difference so much, so when Krishna goes out, yes, there'll be a different mood, but it's still the same Krishna. So for those who aren't attached to Braja Krishna, then they're going to see whatever form, just like, let's say, someone is worshipping Ram, then even they see him in Vaikuntha, that means they'll see Vishnumurti, they'll see it's Ram who's come as a Vishnumurti. Does that make sense? Yeah, so they're going to whatever it is, or Vamanadeva is there, someone's worshipping the Lord in Vaikuntha, they'll see the Lord of Vaikuntha has come as Vamana.
Yeah.
You know, so there's always going to be that point that you see. So if you see Krishna, then all the different things, it's all Krishna. You know. Hence, the Shansaras devotees then see everything in connection with Krishna and are always absorbed in Krishna. So So they're always remembering Krishna. So even they're seeing a tree, but still either that tree somehow reminds them of the pastimes of Krishna, or the tree, they see that the tree has come from Krishna, or it's a living entity who's servant of Krishna, and then they remember Krishna in some way or another. They're going to always be absorbed. So then they don't see, that's why when the Brajvasis went to Kurukshetra, they just see their Krishna, but the situation is stuff, he doesn't interact the way he is, and it's also, you know, restraint means it's not that there's someone holding him back. It's just that that occasion you wouldn't behave like that. You know, they have culture, so they know if it's a formal occasion, you deal in a certain way. So then they'll see like that, because that Radharani makes that point. You know. So the here is that they're seeing Mahanarayan, so then they are seeing, but he doesn't interact the way we normally would. So then they want to find Krishna in that form that he does. So does that make sense? So it's not that he changes form or something like that. It means that it's not him, it's not his sarup. His sarup includes all that, so it just means that's been expanded. But it's still him. But in his original position, his original form, that's where then all those aspects will be. So that aspect doesn't leave Vrindavan, because it's about the devotees. Right? Because when Krishna goes to Mathura, because it's saying Krishna from Vrindavan goes to Mathura with his father, but then they see him differently. So then they're dealing with it, you know, by his arrangements and internal potency, they're dealing with a different seeming aspect and form and all that. But it's still the same Krishna. Nanda Baba is still dealing in all that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, when we first read this pastime of Krishna's going to Mathura, and that, you know, the pangs of separation that the Prajapasi felt, you know, the first, you know, obvious solution was like, Mathura is not that far, why don't you guys just shift in there and, you know, continue whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. But now we understand that the form has to match the place and associates.
Yeah.
So it just can't happen. Because then it brings Rasa Bas. Even Nanda Baba, as far as I remember, he didn't enter Mathura, he stayed, you know, outside of the wall. Mm-hmm. They camped out, and then and then Krishna came to him. He had to go out from the gate and then meet, and then he went back again.
That's right. Yeah.
So it has to match everything.
It has to match.
Isn't it, Prabhu?
There is a place that Krishna actually is out of Vrindavan for 3 months, because that separation is real. So he goes for 3 months and comes back. That is explained later.
Yeah. You have that, and Brihad Bhagavatamrita, I think, talks about it.
Here also it's more clearly explained. Why is it that he actually went, because that mood has to be there. It is real. That separation mood is also real. It's not, they are seeing, but they are feeling. That mood is real, but it's only for a short time. And he comes back. He says, I'm going to come back. He just goes, and then he comes back after 3 months.
Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. It's the same thing, so what a difference that. There's the difference and the non-difference. So those aspects, but the main point is the whole thing, as we said, is all real.
Yeah.
Feelings are real, all these different things are real, but it won't manifest. That's why even you see in Vidagdha Madhava that you have, you know, Radharani as Satyabhama and Chandravali as Rukmini, and, you know, Uddhava is Madhav Mangal, and like this. But then,
Lalita Madhava.
Oh, I said Vidagdha. Mm-hmm. Okay, Lalita Madhava. Yeah, Lalita Madhava. So then, but they're saying, you know, okay, this is, you know, nice, they're interacting with Krishna, they're happy to be with Krishna, but they're saying, why don't we go back to Vrindavan? It's so much better. You know, it's just so much nicer. And so that's the end of the. They're making that plans to go to Vrindavan.
So within that 3 months, what form of Krishna they see is the Spurti form. So that's how they don't... They see Krishna in these 3 months also, but that form is the Spurti form where Krishna spontaneously appears and then disappears. Like when they go to the fields, they see Krishna's footprint and they see Krishna, but Krishna appears and then... But after 3 months, they're fully back and then pastimes are happening normally. So that's why that Krishna never went out of Vrindavan, because he's present in the Spurti form even within those 3 months.
That's also another way. He never leaves means there's never the time when he's gone and he's not there. He's always there in some form. Because it also mentions he's there also that Bhav form.
Yeah. That's Spurti.
That's Spurti also. Okay.
It explains there are three forms in which one can see Krishna. This is like the sudden, spontaneous. Krishna appears and then disappears. That's the Spurti form. But this form where Krishna is like always there and the pastimes happening. But for these 3 months he goes. Otherwise, at least in the earthly pastimes, it has to happen, because otherwise, where is that mood that Krishna left, leaves? And
yeah, because in Goloka you don't have that kind of thing. But even there, there's that little bit, because then that separation is there. It's like the demons are there, but they're not killed. Here they are.
That's how the semblance between the prakat and aprakat, what is the commonality and what is the difference, all those details come up.
They're all coming.
Next. Hmm? In the next book it will be there.
Next future. Book. Future attraction. Yogamaya sent by the Leela Shakti then brought them back to earthly Vrindavan. Rupa Goswami has explained this fact in the verse in Stavamala. May you be protected by Mukunda, who in order to teach the cowherd men that there is no place as sweet as earthly Vrindavan, showed them effortlessly by Kunta, and then brought them back to earthly Gokula. Sardata Darshani 10:28-17. Sent means send them. No? The cowherd man, no?
Yes.
Okay. Because otherwise you're not sure who is sent.
Because the transporter and transporter acquired the first time.
Yes, no, the farther point, that this the beginning.
So, is this happened in Akrura God? Is
that yes.
The same place?
Yes.
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 But what, I just forgot, what's the prelude? How did they get there?
They were wondering if when will they be, you know, liberated and go back to Godhead. And so Krishna's kind of
showed them.
Yeah.
Oh.
It comes again, the whole episode comes again in the discussion about the devotees of the Lord.
Oh, okay.
There he explains all the details, why they come and why Krishna will shows them even Vrindavan.
When that after Govardhan that they started to think that Krishna is God.
Yes, yes,
and
I think
then
that
they
time.
Wanted to see.
There was the oldest. Yeah, yeah. That's the 26th chapter. Mm.
Because it was too esoteric that he was holding this hill. They started to think maybe he's something more than.
Yeah, to wonder who he is.
And then they discussed and they came to the conclusion that he's not. Or maybe he's somebody but not God for sure, maybe a demigod.
Yeah, like a demigod.
And then they wondered maybe we can see something special if he's such a great person. And
oh, as a demigod, okay.
And then it was like a description somewhere I heard that it was like a lift. He told them to go in, close their eyes, and then he showed the eye.
Well, that's what it says here. They took them and brought them back. Hmm?
The place is called Brahmarida.
Brahmarida.
And then future becomes Akrura God.
Oh, okay.
Because Akrura comes later. And then.
Okay. Oh, okay. Then the Lord, complete with all his expansions, who is situated in the core of everyone's heart, responding to the request of his devotees, appeared from Devaki, non-different from the Lord, in the dense darkness of night, like the full moon rising on the eastern horizon. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.3.8. This is also the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.15.35. Just as some magician assumes the form of a fish, etc., in order to catch a crane, which he will eat and then returns to its original form, giving up that form, so the Lord, though unborn, by a form attained by Maya, destroyed the burden of the earth, the demons, and then gave up that form or disappeared. Yoga Maya Samavritaha, Bhagavad Gita 7.25, means the Lord is covered by a shadow body made of Maya like a snake skin. But that's, I mean, it's still him, but that's what people see. Right? In the Vishnu Purana prose portion, Atma Vinashaya means for destroying Shishupal. Shishupal saw the chakra thrown by the Lord as a mass of bright rays for destroying himself. Because of seeing this, his hatred was destroyed and he saw the Lord, devoid of his covering of Maya. Moreover, this story occurred in another kalpa, when the curse of Jaya and Vijaya did not take place, according to the questions and answers of Maitreya and Parasara concerning liberation of Shishupal and Dantavakra. It would be unsuitable for Jaya and Vijaya to be cursed in every kalpa.
So it happened just once?
It appears so.
Yeah.
Or, you know, not on a regular basis. But here, then, kalpa here, then would mean a day of Brahma.
Yeah.
When Vasudev describes how the Lord withdraws his forms, the same meaning should be given. Recalling the Lord's previous words, being devoted, but with the predominance of knowledge that Krishna is the Lord, he establishes the human pastimes of the Lord manifesting from Vishuddha Sattva by the Lord, where he becomes an ordinary human out of great humility, and Vasudeva thinks of the Lord as his son. But then the Lord may ask, why do you think of me as your son? He answers as follows. Indeed, while still in the maternity room, you told us that you, the unborn Lord, had already been born several times as our son in previous ages. After manifesting each of these bodies to protect your own nature, you then made them unmanifest, unaffected like the sky, or supremely glorified, all-pervading Lord, who can understand your spiritual abode. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.85.20. O Krishna, you said in the maternity room, I then manifest to you in several of the yugas. I have said I was born since I entered and then came out of your body. This is not a material birth from a body. As friend of the jivas, I enter as the antaryami in all bodies, individually and as a whole. Tam dur darsham gudam anu pravishtam guha hitam gravareshtam purana. The Lord enters into the depths of heart and is hard to see. He is eternal. Katha Upanishad 1.2.12. Tad shishtva tad evanu pravishat. Having manifested the jivas in the world, I entered them, Taittiriya Upanishad 2.6.2. This is the meaning of my being born, since it is seen everywhere in scriptures. Vasudeva answers, like the sky, do you not associate, since it is said, Sva Krita Vichitra Yonishu Vishvaniva Hetu Taya Tara Tam Tara tamatas chakshi. Apparently entering among the variegated species of living beings you have created, you reveal your shakti in them to various degrees. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.19. Entering the various bodies of jiva, you then leave. Continually you enter and leave. Who can understand the maya of your bhumna, special powers or vibhutis? No one can. Your birth from us is praised by all, Let the wise person adoring you be the proof. But you are beyond my intelligence completely. It is not illogical to say that vidatat, do, means enter. It is said in the commentary on Sahasranama, Shishtan karoti, do the learned, means he protected the learned. Normal verbs sometimes have special meaning. Kuru kashtani, do the sticks, means bring the sticks. It has been shown that Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. Right, so here then it means then it would go into Lakshana, right? Because in direct, you know, what does that mean? Like you do dishes or you do the laundry, how do you do the sticks? It just means bring the sticks. So there must be some reference where the sticks are there, and you regular beings, and so he means do that work. So does that make sense? So it's this ordinary verb, but how it's being used, then you understand it has this other special meaning. It has been shown that Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan and is situated eternally in a human form, which is the Supreme Brahman. In the first canto, the earth shows the eternal, intrinsic nature of the Lord's beauty, power of mind, power of knowledge, senses, and power of action, senses. Beauty, power of mind, power of knowledge, senses, and power of action, senses. That's the... Yes, I'm saying that, but here he's giving these three. This is the... The six opulences, but in the form of the Shakar, what do you call it? Not the Shakar, the...
No, the...
You know, the six qualities? Kalyana Gunas. There's another way of understanding it is the physical power of physical, power of the mental, power of the intellectual. Because it also means is that physical means that you have that situation of that, the existence of things and all that, and that power, because he's the Lord of that Shakti, like that. So he has that Shakti, you know, just like you have the, then with the intellectual, you have the virya, means, and then you have that power, you know, of that, you know, the qualities and everything and the intelligence, how to use and apply something, or then in the Aniruddha, then the power of the mind, you know, that's controlled, it's used in the proper way, it's not misused. So
it's three sets of two, is it?
Yes, but here it's mentioning, you're mentioning these, then you have the other three qualities. So in other words, one, you're showing the power, and then you're showing the other quality that goes with it.
Oh, I see, as a support.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Like that. And so... in this way, slowly getting closer to understanding how. Because it's mentioned in both ways. When you see them quoting the verses on the six opulences, they either use the one, you know, the Balam Kriyacha, like this, or the, you know, the Kalyana, and the other one that's the six as we generally are always hearing it.
Yeah.
But it's just a different perspective of which you're bringing out.
Also, I think Maharaj said, the Kalyana Gunas is more seen from the Aishwarya perspective. That beauty falls within the Aishwarya aspect. It falls in, like, you know.
Yeah, well, it's the source.
Yeah.
Because beauty is the original and all qualities come from there.
No, but only when you see from the sweetness perspective, that would be very much more clear. And that's why the names also, when we see from this, the Kalyana Gunas, it seems more like fit to explaining in the terms of the three Purushas. Then
yes, but you also have the aspect is that then if you look at that, it just, I was just thinking about it, that you have the Sankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha, they each have the two, and Vasudeva has all six. So then Vasudeva is the full manifestation of Bhagavan. Well, then Sankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha are technically manifestations of Paramatma.
Yes.
You know, so that way then you get Mahanarayan, and then how all the expansions and everything come.
Mm-hmm. Paramatma, you mean the Purush avatars?
Yeah.
Purush avatars are just that principle that, you know, it means Bhagavan means he has all opulences.
Right.
So even though Santarshan Prajumna Aniruddha are Bhagavan and have all opulences for the particular pastime, they're only really showing those two.
Yeah.
And so Vasudeva is showing all. So Krishna is showing all, but then, you know, then Sankarshan will be showing something, Prajumna something, and Aniruddha something in the Dwarka pastimes. But they all have the full.
Yeah.
But the point is if you're manifesting the full, then, you know, you don't need four Vasudevas, you know, standing there and, hey, you're looking good today. Yeah. You're not looking bad yourself. Like that kind of.
Krishna can do that in Dwarka.
Yeah. But it's just they you know, so you're kind of bringing that aspect of that, the full opulence is superior to just the part. So that's why then also then in the incarnations and swamsa means they're only manifesting a part of the potency. And I think there's a distinction there of who's much more and then who's less. Like I think Vamana and Varaha are more. And so then has a particular name. And then I think when it said they more than that, even more full than that's Paravasta. Mm-hmm. So there's something with Paravasta than this, and then it comes down to that.
Yes.
Because it was some list of
Paravasta.
Yeah, like this, like that. So remember, it had the list, and then, you know, it goes off this way, then means one thing, goes off this way, and means the other. No?
Yes, ma'am.
Chart is just now coming.
Yeah, we just figured it out in Russian, and we're gonna print it out.
Ah, he gave the chart.
Yeah, yeah. He sent it the chart. Then he explained the chart. I didn't get it quite clear. Then the second time, I got it better. Then I really contemplated. Now I think I know, but probably not. But at least we figured out all the positions and, you know, what is common, just terminology, because it's also confusing, because the terminology explaining one thing, it sounds like the same terminology explaining another thing, so we have to be...
Well, there's a common, it's like in words, there's a root.
Yeah.
And from that it comes out, so these, basically you can say in these, they're synonyms to something. But so what's common is that main principle. So if you understand the main principle, you understand how the detail is manifesting that principle. And another thing, the detail is manifesting, it's the same principle but slightly different approach.
Is that person?
The myth.
Shukadev may know. Yeah. Shiva is saying that verse. I know, Shukadev knows, Vyasadev may
or may not know, and I definitely don't know. Right? And I don't got a clue. Yeah.
There's the main confusion in using the word Prabhava and Vaibhava.
Yeah.
Now Vaibhava actually means like grandeur. Mm-hmm. The grandeur has two things. One is it is opulent, and as well as it has that variety.
Mm. Okay.
So when
so variety is also opulence.
Yes.
Yeah, in a sense.
You know, it's just like somebody has 10 cars, they're all different. It's variety that you're noticing. You know, hey, he's got 10 cars, you know, one for going to the market, one for going for a drive, one for, you know, like this. But you look at the other side, it has to be opulence. Otherwise, how does he have 10 cars?
And then when it is referred in the expansions chart, there Prabhava is referred as influence and Vaibhava is referred as variety. Mm-hmm. So variety means there is little change in the mood. Prabhava influence means the same person manifesting more. So that's the context in the expansion chart. When it comes to explaining the Paravastas, Prabhava, Vaibhava, here Prabhava is influence and Vaibhava is more grandiose, so it's higher than Prabhava. There it is a separate categorization, both same, but actually from Prabhava, Vaibhava comes because first person expands himself more and then change in the mood is from that naturally. So that shift.
Yeah, because the roots are, that's the advantage. If you understand what you can do with the word, then what, and what's the main point, and then how it goes out, you know.
it's subtle, but it also it's based on Sanskrit.
Yes. And maybe that would be one of the things is in these charts that have these things, especially ones that are more have these overlapping things. Also have a paper that is words, an explanation of the words and all that, and then how that would be applied in the chart so you can understand what is the principle that you're working with that you get all these different applications, because the same word will be used in one context and in another.
That was my main confusion, because like Prabhu explained, the Prabhava in the upper part of the chart manifests by Baba, and that the one follows the other. And I was like, yeah, I got it right. And then in the later explanation says that Vaibhava is actually more than Prabhava. And I was thinking, like, what? It's in the reverse order. But once he explained it to me, I kind of got it.
Yeah, well, because Prabhava means you just expand what you have, that's one thing, but you make variety, that's more, showing more opulence.
But also, it refers to a different category.
Yes, yes.
So it's in the Paravasta category.
Yes.
So
yes.
That is separate.
Yes, yes, it's separate, but my meaning is that you have that underlying point. Mm-hmm. It's just which one you want to bring out.
Yeah.
You know.
Then we need to refer to all those Vishwakosh, Amarakosh.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah, just as a footnote.
I think it would be just nice to have all that.
Yes.
Any of these kind of charts, because they always have this confusion. We have a definition of the terms.
Yeah.
Not just the definite means this, but showing the roots and this and that so that we can see where it's coming from and why it goes this way and that way. And
thanks to our mother tongue, which has a lot of variety as much as Sanskrit, so...
Yeah, so I'm just saying it's an advantage. Otherwise, it means even they have more languages, you know, the Russian and the other things like
that.
Yeah,
we actually engaged three translators for that chart just to get the exact terms in Russian. And then I had to edit it. Means I had to think about whether it's exactly what it is, or it's just... Because like you explained yesterday, synonyms.
Yeah.
You know, they're quite... You know, Russian, it's an opulent language,
yeah.
You know, comparing to English.
Yeah.
Not as opulent as Sanskrit.
Yeah, nothing.
So we have to really work on this one. Which, it's good.
That's not good. Because the more you do that, the more it makes sense other things.
Yeah. So it's... Now we got the most developed version.
Okay.
So far.
Okay. Very good.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.